Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. This morning we're going to visit with Lisa Bennett, actually a bit beyond because she's out there in California, and we're going to be talking about a book. So good morning to you, Lisa.
Good morning to you.
And Lisa is a contributing author to a book called Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability. You know, Lisa, the title Smart by Nature caught my eye right away. Because we all are smart in a lot of different ways, you know. It's in us. Sometimes we just can't get it out.
That's right, and I'm glad it caught your eye. We spent a very long time trying to think of that title.
Yes, you've worked on this book for and had input for quite a few years.
Yes, and we spent a number of years. This is a project of the Center for Eco-Literacy,
yes,
which is in Berkeley, California. And we spent a number of years traveling the country and visiting schools to see what they were engaging in around sustainability, because, you know, there really is a movement growing out there around all green issues and eco or sustainability. People use different words for
mm-hmm.
it. But the ways in which schools get into this through having gardens, you know, changing the school lunch to make it healthier, taking a look at the how they use energy and mm-hmm. might use it better, and also, you know, the most direct thing through what they're teaching
yes.
young people.
Yes, that's so important. And now, you said you travel across the country, and I really want people to know this is not just a California thing. You did go across the nation, and you have a couple schools in the Midwest, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, that are featured in the book. You couldn't cover it all, obviously.
No. And what we attempted to do is to give a sampling, you know, because this is a very diverse movement. We really wanted to show that it is happening all over the place and that it happens in a lot of different ways, you know, which is very important for schools, because schools don't really want to be told, you know, hey,
yes.
you know, you need to do this.
And they have so many things they have to do already. So you go, one more thing, you're going to tell me how I should do this?
That's right. But what we've found that's so interesting is that, you know, it's bubbling up from the schools, and in part, I think that's happening because a lot of people are interested in a future of, you know, green jobs and green livelihoods. And so they have seen it as an important, you know, very important thing to start thinking about. How do you prepare today's young people for
mm-hmm.
that kind of a future?
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the questions that always comes up with schools when you try to change something, I think, is how much is it going to cost? Is that an issue that you talked about when you visited with schools and the changes they were making?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that that happens is people always assume that these changes will cost more. And what people who have been engaged in this for a while recognize is that, you know, indeed there is sometimes an outlay at the beginning, but that when you look at greening practices over the long haul, so if you look over 10 or 20 years instead of, you know, 1 year, there is a savings, because part of, you know, green practices is being efficient, efficient with resources. So over the long haul, that's a money
mm-hmm.
saver.
Because one of the things you say is that the ideas are transforming schools into model sustainable communities. So we could all learn from this, even if maybe we're not a school.
Absolutely, you know, because one of the real basics about sustainability, you know, which basically means learning how nature works and, you know, how to keep it going in a way where we're not, you know, diminishing it so much that we can't count on the kinds of resources that we've counted on in the past. It involves everybody. So it means that the school also, you know, as it operates as its own little community, is also part of a larger community, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all are playing a part in that. And this is something that I think we're all engaged in learning something new about. How do we practice sustainable living?
And if we don't learn, we're in big trouble.
Well, yeah, and that's where this is an enormously hopeful kind of movement, because there's tremendous positive energy around it. You know, I visited one school where the head of the school said, you know, it was just like, I mean, he was kind of a product of the 1960s, and he said that he felt that same kind of energy, you know, mm-hmm. all over again, mm-hmm. that in the number of crises that we're facing, you know, is this amazing opportunity to take a look at how we're living and how we might want to change that for our own better ends, you know, through health, through education, through, you know, the enjoyment of better living.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, I want to ask you about some specific examples, but before that, there's one other point that I noticed was made, and that was that schools who were having low scores, problem schools, became nationally recognized successes.
Yes.
Amazing.
It is amazing. You know, there's and the interesting thing is that there is a growing body of research that shows that when you get kids into the environment, the natural environment, and you give them some kind of a project that seems really relevant to them, that they tend to do better overall in their academic performance and actually have fewer problems. And, you know, there are a number of reasons for that. One, you know, pretty straightforward one is because kids love hands-on things and they love the opportunity to, you know, get out of the classroom and do something and apply that knowledge. So a lot of the projects that are designed in schools that are taking on sustainability, you know, are ways for young people to apply their knowledge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they have a project where they have to figure something out, they're going to be a lot more motivated to learn, you know, some of the material that teachers want them to learn.
Numbers make a lot more sense if it's not a numbers table. You've got to figure
right.
out because it means something. Yeah,
that's right.
It makes sense, yes. Well, so can you give us a couple of specific examples of, related to the schools that were either in the book or maybe not in the book of it, you know, a specific project that they worked on?
Sure. So let's see. There's one example that comes to mind, which I tend to think of because it's not the kind of project that people usually think of when they think of a sustainability project. You know, it's conjure up rivers and, you know, streams and things like that. But one of the things that I think is exciting about this work is that it can happen in all the academic subjects. So, for instance, there was a kindergarten through third grade art teacher in Oakland, California, who decided to send all her kids out, go across campus, gather all the paper that was in the recycling bins, learn how to turn it into, to actually recycle it themselves and turn it into this beautiful paper quilt, which they then made into an art project that now stands, and maybe it's 10 by 10, and hangs in their hallway. And in the process of doing this, the lesson for the kids was, you know, you can take something that other people have thrown away as trash and turn it into something beautiful. And, you know, therein is one of the basic principles of sustainability, mm-hmm. is understanding the multiple uses for things and that things don't have to come to an end quite so soon as we often tend to make them come to an end.
And I know they were so proud of that, and they went home and told their parents all about it, too.
I'm sure.
What better way to teach and learn, right?
Yes.
To spread the word.
Absolutely.
Now, we've had a number of schools in Iowa that are interested either in the farm-to-school projects or growing their own gardens. Can you give us a bit of an example, maybe, of a school that, you know, grew their own garden and then how they put it to use?
Yes, there's one school off the coast of the state of Washington that comes to mind that it kind of happened casually. There was a parent who had a small farm, and she happened to have an extra greenhouse, and she decided that she would donate it to the school. And so she donated this greenhouse along with, you know, some money to support somebody to help oversee growing the food in the greenhouse. And it turned into this real enormous project where you know, all the kids ended up having a time to learn about how things grow and to learn the ecological principles that are inherent in watching something grow, but also to make, you know, it led to a number of steps that created dramatic improvements in the school food. So they were growing their own food, and they were, you know, gathering food from some of the local farms. And then they were also inviting those farmers and other community members to the school lunchroom to have this community dinner once a month. Mm-hmm. And it brought everybody together in this, you know, around community in a way that people always love. We don't do it very often, but we always love it when we do it.
Great. Well, this is I'm hoping a lot of folks will get this book, Smart by Nature, Schooling for Sustainability, and look at all the examples you have in there and maybe get more excited about the possibilities.
And if I might just add that there is a lot of information about it on our website.
Okay, yes, absolutely.
It's the Center for Eco-Literacy, which is ecoliteracy.org.
Okay, pretty simple. And if people miss that, they can give me a call, and we'll be sure to pass it on. We want to thank you very much for your time and for visiting with us, Lisa Bennett.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for featuring it.
All right. And until next time, here's a thought. You cannot export what you do not grow at home.